Chapter 14. Two Difficult Tasks. There are two other emotionally charged tasks a manager must perform. They are interviewing a potential employee and trying to talk a valued employee out of quitting. Interviewing. The purpose of the interview is to select a good performer, educate him as to who you and the company are, determine if a mutual match exists, sell him on the job. The means at your disposal typically consist of an hour or two of interview time and a check of the candidate's references. We know how hard it is to assess the actual past performance of our own subordinates, even though we spend much time working closely with them. Here, we sit somebody down and try to find out, in an hour, how well he is likely to perform in an entirely new environment. If performance appraisal is difficult, interviewing is just about impossible. The fact is, we managers have no choice but to perform the interview, no matter how hard it is. But we must realize that the risks of failure are high. The other tool we have for assessing potential performance is to research past performance by checking references. But you'll often be talking to a total stranger, so even if he comments freely about the candidate, what he says won't have much meaning to you without some knowledge of how his company does business and what values it works by. Moreover, while few references will out and out lie, they tend not to volunteer specific critical remarks. So reference checking hardly exempts you from getting as much as you can out of the interview. Conducting the interview. The applicant should do 80% of the talking during the interview, and what he talks about should be your main concern. But you have a great deal of control here by being an active listener. Keep in mind, you only have an hour or so to listen. When you ask a question, a garrulous or nervous person might go on and on with his answer long after you've lost interest. Most of us will sit and listen until the end out of courtesy. Instead, you should interrupt and stop him, because if you don't, you are wasting your only asset, the interview time, in which you have to get as much information and insight as possible. So when things go off the track, get them back on quickly. Apologize if you like, and say, "I would like to change the subject to X, Y, or Z." The interview is yours to control, and if you don't, you have only yourself to blame. An interview produces the most insight if you steer the discussion towards subjects familiar to both you and the candidate. The person should talk about himself, his experience, what he has done and why, what he would have done differently if he had it to do over, and so forth. But this should be done in terms familiar to you, so that you can evaluate its significance. In short, make sure the words used mean the same thing to both of you. What are the subjects that you should bring up during an interview? A group of managers provided me with what they thought were the best questions. They were: describe some projects that were highly regarded by your management, especially by the levels above your immediate supervisor. What are your weaknesses? How are you working to eliminate them? Convince me why my company should hire you. What are some of the problems you are encountering in your current position? How are you going about solving them? What could you have done to prevent them from cropping up? Why do you think you're ready for this new job? What do you consider your most significant achievements? Why were they important to you? What do you consider your most significant failures? What did you learn from them? Why do you think an engineer should be chosen for a marketing position? Vary this one according to the situation. What was the most important course or project you completed in your college career? Why was it so important? The information to be gained here tends to fall into four distinct categories. First, you're after an understanding of the candidate's technical knowledge, not engineering or scientific knowledge, but what he knows about performing the job he wants, his skill level. For an accountant, technical skill means an understanding of accounting. For a tax lawyer, tax laws. For an actuary, statistics and the use of actuarial tables, and so on. Second, you're trying to assess how this person performed in an earlier job using his skills and technical knowledge. In short, not just what the candidate knows, but also what he did with what he knows. Third, you are after the reasons why there may be any discrepancy between what he knew and what he did, between his capabilities and his performance. And finally, you are trying to get a feel for his set of operational values, those that would guide him on the job. Let's look at how the questions just described fit into the four categories. Technical/skills. Describe some projects. What are your weaknesses? What he did with knowledge. Past achievements, past failures. Discrepancies. What did you learn from failures? Problems in current position. Operational values. Why are you ready for a new job? Why should my company hire you? Why should engineer be chosen for marketing? Most important college course/project. The ultimate purpose of interviewing is to make a judgment about how the candidate would perform in your company's environment. This is at odds with the principle we stressed about performance reviews, the need to avoid the potential trap. But when you're hiring, you must judge potential contribution. Within the hour or so at your disposal, you must move between the world of the past employer and your own, and project the candidate's future performance in a new environment based on his own description of past performance. This managerial task is clearly tricky and high risk, but unfortunately, unavoidable. You can't get away from relying on a candidate's self-assessment, but that's not a bad way to get direct answers to direct questions. If, for example, you were to ask, "How good are you technically?" the interviewee might be taken aback momentarily, but then clear his throat and say, timidly, "Well, I think I'm pretty good." As you listen, you'll probably get a decent fix on how capable he really is. Don't worry about being blunt. Direct questions tend to bring direct answers, and when they don't, they produce other forms of insight into the candidate. Asking a candidate to handle a hypothetical situation can also enlighten you. I once interviewed someone for the position of cost accountant at Intel. He had a Harvard MBA and came from the food service industry. He knew nothing about the semiconductor business, and I knew nothing about finance, so we really couldn't talk in much detail about his technical ability to do the job. I decided to take him through the semiconductor manufacturing process, step by step. After saying I would answer any specific questions he had, I asked him what the finished cost of a wafer would be. He asked some questions and pondered matters for a while. He then started to think his way through the basic semiconductor cost accounting principles, discovering some of them as he went along, and ultimately came up with the correct answer. He was hired because this exercise demonstrated, as it turns out correctly, that his problem-solving capacity was first rate. Another approach follows that you may want to use while interviewing. The candidate can tell you a great deal about his capabilities, skills, and values by asking you questions. Ask the candidate what he would like to know about you, the company, or the job. The questions he asks will tell you what he already knows about the company, what he would like to know more about, and how well prepared he is for the interview. There's nothing foolproof about this, however. Once, a prospective manager came to my office with a copy of our annual report, which he had read very carefully and marked up with penetrating questions. In fact, I couldn't answer many of them. I was very impressed. We hired him, and he failed badly on the job. As I said, interviewing is a high-risk proposition. A final point about references. When you are talking to them, you're really after the same information that you tried to get directly from the candidate. If you know the reference personally, you have a much better chance of getting real information. If you don't, try to keep him on the phone long enough to let some sort of personal bond develop. If you can uncover some common experience or association, the reference will probably become more open with you. In my experience, the last 10 minutes of a half-hour conversation are much more valuable than the first 10 minutes, thanks to that bond. If possible, you should talk with the applicant again after you have checked his references, because you may have gotten some new perspectives. Such a follow-up interview can be quite a focused affair. What about tricks? The best ones I've heard about come to me from somebody who had tried to get into the Navy's nuclear submarine program. Admiral Rickover apparently personally interviewed each candidate and employed techniques like having the candidate sit on a three-legged chair. When it tipped over, the poor man would be left sprawling on the floor. Rickover evidently thought the trick tested strength of character in the face of embarrassment. But I think the interview should be completely straightforward. Remember, a candidate is a potential employee. He will go away from having talked to you with a strong set of first impressions. If those are wrong, and you hire the person, it will take a long time before they change. So show yourself and your environment as they really are. Are there any guarantees of success? Several years ago, I interviewed a person for a high-level position at Intel. I did the work as carefully and thoroughly as I could. I had a very good feel, I thought, of the whys and wherefores of the person's skills, past performance, and values. And we hired him. From day one, he was a disaster. Much humbled, I've since gone over my notes from the interviews and the conversations with references. To this day, I haven't a clue about why I didn't spot the candidate's considerable flaws. So in the end, careful interviewing doesn't guarantee you anything. It merely increases your odds of getting lucky. I quit. This is what I most dread as a manager. A subordinate, highly valued and esteemed, decides to quit. I am talking not about someone whose motives are more money and better perks at another company, but about an employee who is dedicated and loyal, yet feels his work is not appreciated. You and the company don't want to lose him, and his decision to leave reflects on you. If he feels his efforts have gone unrecognized, you have not done your job and have failed as his manager. The opening shot usually occurs when you are on the run. On your way to what you consider an important meeting, your subordinate timidly stops you and mutters under his breath, "Do you have a minute?" He then mutters further that he has decided to leave the company. You look at him wide-eyed. Your initial reaction to his announcement is absolutely crucial. If you're human, you'll probably want to escape to your meeting, and you mumble something back about talking things over later. But in almost all such cases, the employee is quitting because he feels he is not important to you. If you do not deal with the situation right at the first mention, you'll confirm his feelings, and the outcome is inevitable. Drop what you are doing. Sit him down and ask him why he's quitting. Let him talk. Don't argue about anything with him. Believe me, he's rehearsed his speech countless times during more than one sleepless night. After he's finished going through all his reasons for wanting to leave, they won't be good ones, ask him more questions. Make him talk, because after the prepared points are delivered, the real issues may come out. Don't argue, don't lecture, and don't panic. Remember, this is only the opening skirmish, not the war. And you cannot win the war here, but you can lose it. You have to convey to him by what you do that he is important to you, and you have to find out what is really troubling him. Don't try to change his mind at this point, but buy time. After he said all he has to say, ask for whatever time you feel is necessary to prepare yourself for the next round. But know that you must follow through on whatever you've committed yourself to do. What's your next move? Because you have a major problem, you go to your supervisor for help and advice. He no doubt is also on his way to an important meeting. He, like you, will try to put things off, and most probably not because he doesn't care, but because the situation affects you more than your supervisor. After all, it is your subordinate who has decided to quit. It is up to you to make it your supervisor's problem and make him participate in the solution to your problem. Corporate citizenship will probably play a substantial role in what happens next. Your subordinate is a valued employee of the company. You now must vigorously pursue every avenue available to you to keep him with the firm, even if it means transferring him to another department. If it seems that is the likely solution, you must become the project manager of that solution until the whole thing is settled. You may ask why you should put yourself out to keep an employee whom you're going to lose. There's a basic principle involved. You owe it to your employer to save an employee for the company. Beyond this, the golden rule can become more than a nice ideal in situations of this sort. Today, you save a valued contributor for the company by virtually giving him to a fellow manager. Tomorrow, it will be his turn to do you the same favor. In the long run, if all managers take this position, they will all win. Now you may be ready to go back to your subordinate with a solution, one that addresses his real reasons for wanting to quit, and one that in turn will benefit the company. By now, he should know that he is important to you, but he might say that you should have offered him the new position long ago. He might go on to say that you're only doing it now because he forced you into it, his feeling being that, if I stay, you'll think of me as the blackmailer forever. You now have to make him feel comfortable with the new arrangement. You might say something like, "You did not blackmail us into doing anything we shouldn't have done anyway. When you almost quit, you shook us up and made us aware of the error of our ways. We are just doing what we should have done without any of this happening." Then your subordinate may say he's accepted a job somewhere else and can't back out. You have to make him quit again. You say he's really made two commitments. First, to a potential employer he only vaguely knows, and second, to you, his present employer. And commitments he has made to the people he has been working with daily are far stronger than one made to a casual new acquaintance. As I said, the whole thing is not easy, either for the subordinate or the supervisor. But you must give it your best shot, because the good of the company is involved, and the issue is even more important than keeping one valued employee. This subordinate is valuable and important because he has attributes that make him so. Other employees respect him, and if they are like him, they identify with him. So other superior performers like him will track what happens to him, and their morale and commitment to the company will hinge on the outcome of this person's fate.